I've loved 200 Voices. I'll be honest, I'd never listened to a podcast before, but I have listened to every single episode of 200 Voices. The only one I probably won't listen to is my own, because like most people, I hate the sound of my own voice when I hear it. But I've absolutely loved it. It's been with me on long journeys as I've travelled around the coast seeing all of our volunteers and supporters. My name's Mark Dowie. I was a volunteer at Salcombe Lifeboat Station until 2019, when I was appointed Chief Executive of the charity, and it's been the greatest honour of my life to lead the charity through the last 5 years. By the end of my time, when I finally leave in June, I will have visited every single lifeboat station in the RLI, right through all of Ireland and the UK. And I also will have been to every beach lifeguard support unit, most of the beaches that we lifeguard, and I've seen countless fundraising branches. I've been to all of our shops, all 174 of our shops. I've bought a lapel badge in every single one of our shops. And I've met thousands of people along the way. When I'm thinking back, I actually become quite emotional about it. I think there's a unifying spirit amongst lifeboat people, life-saving people, lifeguard people, is a sort of selflessness. They turn up, they commit their time and effort, they commit their emotion. Sometimes that bubbles over. People feel very strongly about their service to the RLI. But they commit all of that time and effort, and sometimes their lives too. We shouldn't forget that. And they do it in a spirit of just decency. And you know, when all the stuff is going on around you, when you read all the things you read in the newspapers, you hear all the things that are going on in the world, now, being able to hold on to the fact that there are people, and it's the very huge majority of people in these islands who are just fundamentally decent, getting on with their lives, committing their time for others, that's something really to hold on to. One of the first stations I went to visit very early on in my time was Wicklow in Ireland, and I got to meet the crew, of course, but I also got to meet the fundraising team, and one of the ladies who'd been instrumental in fundraising for a long time, and I won't name her to save her blushes, but she ended up curtsying to me, and that had never happened to me before, and I'm sure it'll never happen again, but we both burst out laughing, because it was such a funny moment, and she's still kindly sending me and my wife jam every year at Christmas. So that was a lovely moment. Although I was a London boy throughout all of my youth, I was sent down to Salcombe to learn how to sail very early on, at the age of about nine years old. And Salcombe became my spiritual home. And I carried on going back, learning to sail and then teaching sailing all the way through school and university. And then I joined the Royal Navy and carried on going back to Salcombe. And when the opportunity came to live there, we grabbed it as a family. And Salcombe's now home. And in all of my time on the water in Salcombe, the lifeboat was always there. At night, you'd hear the maroons go off in those days, and you'd hear the Tyne engines flash up, the Watson engines to begin with, actually, Tyne engines later on. And we'd know the lifeboat was out. And in fact, I got involved in one or two of the shouts inside Salcombe Harbour when we were often looking for people who were missing. They would sometimes ask for extra help, and the sailing school instructors would be asked to get out of bed and go and help. So I saw that as well. I've always been close to the sea. I've been a mad keen sailor all my life. And the lifeboat has always been something I've looked at and admired. I had a long career overseas in finance, actually. But in the middle of it all, I came back to Salcombe and I bought a boatyard in Salcombe, and I owned and ran that for 6 years. And many of the people who worked with me at the yard were members of the lifeboat crew and the fire station, actually. And so I saw them doing their volunteering, and in fact encouraged it. I was very keen they were able to do that. I then retired for, I think, the second time from my finance career, and reappeared in Salcombe, and was encouraged, in inverted commas, to become a volunteer at the lifeboat station. It was a very easy task for the person sent to encourage me. I was mad keen to do it. I became a launch authority, first of all, and then became lifeboat operations manager, and had two happy years doing that before I heard that the role of chief executive of the RLI was coming up. I was pretty daunted by it to begin with. In fact, had really rejected the possibility of me doing it, because I knew just what an all-consuming role it would be. I persuaded myself and then Hazel, my wife, that it would be a good thing to do, to put something back into not just my local community, but something bigger. I was delighted, really delighted, to be appointed. I'm the 14th person who's done this role. It hasn't always been called chief executive, but there have been 58 prime ministers in the same time, in the 200 years the charity's been around. And I knew there'd be big challenges, just as my predecessors faced challenges, and just as my successors will face challenges. I knew there'd be some tough decisions to be taken, that they wouldn't always be popular. I knew we'd have to continue evolving the charity. And I also knew, because I'd come from a station, that the reaction to change is often highly emotional, and that I would have to be dealing with the local communities, who are the lifeblood of the RLI. I'd have to be dealing with their emotions around change. And so I faced all of that. What, of course, I didn't know when I started was that we would be facing into a pandemic within 9 months of me starting. And I couldn't anticipate the cost of living crisis, all the things that have happened in Eastern Europe, and of course the migration challenge across the Channel as well. Those have been big challenges. There have been others, many others. But it's been a time of progress, of real change, and of also of cementing our values into the RLI. And one of the things I've really enjoyed doing is bringing what we started at Salcombe, actually, way back when I first started. I was very keen that the whole community, the whole lifeboat community in Salcombe, was seen as one crew. And we coined that phrase, in Salcombe. I brought it with me to the RLI. Almost the first thing we did when I arrived was change the name of the headquarters to the support centre. And that was really around the role of the staff being to support the whole of the one crew of the RLI to deliver the service. It's a small thing, but it's one of the things I will leave and be most proud of. I went down to Penlee with the Duke of Kent on, in fact, about the 41st anniversary of the Penlee lifeboat disaster, and we went to lay a wreath at sea off the old station, and we lay off the station in quite rough water, and the Duke of Kent, who is sprightly but elderly, has been our president for now 55 years, insisted himself on going onto the aft deck to lay the wreath in the water. And he, of course, had been at Penlee, been at Mousel, to see the families after the disaster. And I think really seeing, and I've spent a bit of time down in Newlyn and Mousel myself, seeing the strength of character that runs through that community, even after that awful event, touching wood here, but I'm happy to say it's the last major event that we've had of that nature, 1981. Seeing that strength of character that runs through the community is that that's enormously uplifting. So much so that we asked Janet Madron, who is the widow of Stephen Madron, who was the mechanic in the Solomon Brown, we asked Janet to represent the RLI at the funeral of the Queen. And that, for me, was just wholly appropriate. There was someone who'd given really way more than most, but had stayed with the RLI and had been instrumental in all of the things that have happened to rebuild that community ever since. And so it seemed to me wholly appropriate that she went. I've loved 200 Voices. I'll be honest, I'd never listened to a podcast before, but I have listened to every single episode of 200 Voices. The only one I probably won't listen to is my own, because like most people, I hate the sound of my own voice when I hear it. But I've absolutely loved it. It's been with me on long journeys as I've travelled around the coast seeing all of our volunteers and supporters. And there have been some wonderful, wonderful episodes in it that bring a tear to your eye, actually. I've got a few favourites, and I've gone back to them and listened to them again. Certainly Niamh Fitzpatrick's episode talking about her sister Dara, who was the captain of Rescue 116 and very sadly died whilst on a shout. Listening to her talk about the kindness of the lifeboat volunteers who looked after her sister when they found her. That's a very moving episode. Mary McAleese, who's a former president of Ireland, hearing her talk about the fact that if she had her time again, she'd be a lifeboat volunteer. That's pretty special. Hearing those voices and hearing the pride or the love, the commitment, some of the sadness come through those voices has been very special. I'm very pleased to be the last of the 200 voices and to be going out on March the 4th, 2024, today. 200 years exactly after the foundation of what became the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. It's a very different thing today to what it was in 1824. 1824, it was an idea. Now it's a real thing. But I'm certain that the people who gathered in the London Tavern in Bishopsgate in the City of London on March the 4th, 1824, I'm certain they'd feel two things. One is huge pride that an institution has been created and has lasted for 200 years almost exactly in the image of its founders. The pamphlet that Sir William Hillary wrote in 1823 contains within it the foundations of today's RLI. It's still as relevant today as it was then. So they'd feel huge pride. I also think they'd recognise today's institution. They'd see it for what it is. We have a very singular purpose, saving lives at sea. Regardless of who we're saving, regardless of whether we've met them before, whether we're at war or at peace, the job is to save lives at sea. It's what all of our people are devoted to, all the volunteers who put their lives on the line, all of the people who keep our keep the public safe on the beaches, and all of the thousands of people who support us with their time, with their effort, with their money. And so I think they would be very proud. For me today, it's an incredibly proud moment to have taken the RLI through the last 5 years and all its challenges and to have got us to this point. Proud also because I know we have a very strong future. Today is about remembering what's gone before, celebrating everything we have today, a world-class life-saving service, and inspiring the future. And I'm certain that we'll go on to succeed in our third century. So when I've retired and look out to sea and see the lifeboat pass by on exercise, it will remind me of my time as chief executive of the RNLI. And my overwhelming emotion will be just amazingly fond memories of all of the people I've met along the way. Volunteers, supporters, staff too. The staff of the RNLI are an extraordinary group of people, just as committed to its success, even though they're paid for their work, just as committed as the rest of the RNLI population. And it's been a massive privilege to lead them. I've made many friends doing that. And I will retain very fond memories of all that. It's been the greatest honour of my life to hold this post. You're always just a custodian, really. I often feel that I was given the Ming vase when I arrived in the role, and my job is to carry the Ming vase, polish it a bit, mend some cracks, and pass it on to the next person who will carry it just as successfully, I'm sure. This is an institution of which the United Kingdom and Ireland and all of its peoples can be enormously proud. And it's one that is worth nurturing, keeping safe, encouraging to go on to new things, to evolve, to meet the challenges of the future. I'd like to wish my successor all the very best in his role, and I'd like to wish everyone in the RNLI, whether you're a volunteer, a supporter, a donor, or staff, everyone in the RNLI, a very happy 200th birthday.
Hello, this is Tanny Gray Thompson. You've been listening to the RNLI's 200 Voices collection. To hear more remarkable stories, head to rnli.org/200voices or subscribe to RNLI wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Diolch yn fawr.
Two Hundred Voices is an Adventurous Audio Limited production for the RNLI.